You're listening to SBS News.
Once people stop believing that things are going to be okay, that can become a self-fulfilling prophecy.
It's kind of like Santa, like you have to keep in believing it or the presents won't keep coming. Hi, I'm Rania Yallop.
And I'm Elfie Scott.
And welcome to Party Time, the podcast from SBS News, keeping you up to speed on what's happening in federal politics.
And Rania, this is a bit of a different episode, right? This is less full party time and more party pie. And I think that you're coming to the table with something that you said you think about a lot, right?
Yeah, it's something that's been in my head for a while. And this might be like a little bit embarrassing, but I don't really understand government debt.
No, I don't know what that is. Yeah. It's a term I hear a lot.
Yeah, and I know that the debt levels are they're pretty high at the moment. It impacts their ability to kind of do certain things, but I don't know who the government is in debt to, who they actually owe money to, and beyond it's vague, future generations will be impacted. I don't really understand the consequences of it all.
No. Sure, really. If you mentioned any economic term to me, it's just no idea what you're talking about. But yeah, this is a big admission for both of us, and I think we can both be comfortable in this vulnerability.
I think it is, and I am sure we're not alone. I'm sure that plenty of people don't get this government debt issue, and it's such an integral part to how the government runs and what the government's doing. So I feel like it's pretty important to understand it.
Even though it might sound really boring from the offset, that's why we don't know what it is. But, well, somebody who does actually understand all of this is Richard Holden, a professor of economics at UNSW. So welcome, Richard, and thanks so much for joining us.
Good to be with you.
Firstly, can you explain what government debt is, as simply as possible?
Sure. It's money that the state or the federal government borrows from other folks to fund the deficit that sometimes occurs with budgets. So when the government, say the federal government, in a year spends more than it brings in tax and other revenue, it's got to get that from somewhere. And they do that by issuing bonds, a promise to pay investors some money in the future. They take a loan. And that's where it comes from.
How much debt does Australia have at the moment?
It's about $1 trillion, but we also have some things that other people owe us. And so we sometimes talk about net debt, sort of taking off what is owed to us from what we owe to others. And it's ballpark about $850 billion if you do it that way. So it's in the vicinity of $1 trillion.
A chill amount.
Yeah. A trillion seems like a lot of money. How does that compare to kind of historic Australian government debt?
Yeah, that's a really important question. $1 trillion sounds like a lot of money to me as well. Is it a lot? Well, one way to think about it is relative to how big the Australian economy is. And so the Australian economy is sort of pushing up towards $3 trillion of GDP every year. And so that net debt number in Australia, it's roughly 32% at the moment. So compared to Australian history, that's higher than it was, say, during the Howard and Costello government. We actually got that number down to zero. So that's a low number. Yeah. And that was off the back of selling a bunch of government assets, so things like Telstra and the Commonwealth Bank. And also running big budget surpluses off the back of things like the mining boom and restrained spending. Then we had the financial crisis in 2008, 2009, and we spent a lot of money, quite appropriately, to save the economy from going into recession. We borrowed that. Then we had the pandemic some years later, and we spent a lot of money, $300 billion, a little bit more, and we borrowed that. And again, that was the smart thing to do. But you get these big shocks and they add up. And then if you don't run budget surpluses to pay that back down, then you get to where we are. The other thing to think about is how's our debt look compared to other countries around the world? And we're below average. So 30-odd% is it's not the lowest, but it's at the sort of bottom end. And you've got countries, plenty of countries that are over 100%. So I wouldn't want to see us get there, but we're not in bad shape.
Yeah, wow. I mean, something that I think a lot of people find hard to grapple with, and us specifically, we don't know the answer to this. Who is Australia in debt to?
Well, that's a super important question. So about 60% of those Australian government bonds are held by foreign investors. Okay, and some of those are central governments, and some of those are banks and investment funds and things like that. So, you know, people who manage money in the United States, people who manage retirement savings for the California state workers invest in our bonds. You know, the Bank of Japan invests in our bonds. That's about 60% is foreigners. About 25% is actually the Reserve Bank of Australia who holds this stuff. So that's us. And the remaining ballpark 15% is Australian banks and investors. So some of our superannuation funds hold Australian government debt. Australian government debt's a pretty low risk thing to invest in. It doesn't pay the highest interest rate in the world, but Australia's never defaulted on its debt. We're pretty safe. And most people who are putting together a portfolio of investments want some stuff that's high risk, high return, like, you know, Nvidia stock or Tesla or something like that. But they also want some kind of safe stuff. And that's where you get government bonds from highly rated countries like Australia getting into the mix to kind of balance things out.
Can you explain those bonds a bit more? Say, like, I hold some bonds or I hold them through my superannuation. What happens when I want to check them in? Does the government then have to pay that to me? Do they take out more debt to cover that? And also, what's the interest rate like on them?
They have a term that they're issued for. So it could be short term. It could be, you know, a year or 3 years or five. It could be 10 years. Take a 10-year bond. The interest rate varies over time, but just to ground ideas, think of it as being about 4.5%. And so what happens is every year the government gives you 4.5%, might be paid to your super fund or whatever, but they pay that interest to you. And that comes out of their budget. And there's a line item in the federal budget called interest expense. And that's where the money's going, is to the bondholders. And then at the end of the 10 years, the government has to give you the money you invested back. So if you put $1,000 in, they've got to give you $1,000 back, right? Just like any regular loan. And often they'll do that by issuing new bonds to other people. And they'll say, okay, well, we've got $1,000 we've got to pay back over here. We don't have $1,000 lying around, so we better go make another promise to somebody else to pay them 4.5% every year for the next 10 years, and they do that. And, of course, sometimes those are the same people, and that's like rolling over. But it's all sort of, you know, sort of cleaned up at the end of the time period, or what's called the maturity of the bond.
Right. Okay. I'm kind of understanding this now, which is amazing. Can I ask, like, we know who we're in debt to now, but, like, is it a bad thing?
No, it's not a bad thing. Or the way I like to think of about it is it's a bad thing and a good thing. So what are the pros and cons, or what are the good things and the bad things about it? The bad thing about it is, like any debt, you have to pay the interest, and that's money you can't be spending on something else. So anyone who's got a mortgage is familiar with the idea that, you know, the interest on the mortgage is money you can't be spending on other things. What's the good thing about it? Well, it allows government to do a bunch of things that they want to do that they haven't, like, saved up for. Okay, so when it comes to building big infrastructure, roads, hospitals, schools, public transport, energy infrastructure, things like that, we probably don't want to have to save up for that. We'd like to be able to do it now and get the economic and social benefits of those things. And government debt allows us to do that. And that's the good side. And so what the real art of all this is balancing those things. You want to make sure that you are using the money to make really productive investments. And I don't just mean from a financial perspective. I mean from a social perspective.
Recently, when this kind of conversation around debt has come up, there's a lot of talk about kind of the future and younger Australians and how it's going to impact them. What is it about this kind of talk of the future generations, and what is going to be the impact for younger Australians if debt levels remain quite high?
that's incredibly important, and I'm really pleased that we're not pleased that we have to talk about it. I'm pleased that since we do, we are talking about these things like intergenerational equity. And so I think the important thing to remember about government debt is government, you know, the Australian government sort of goes on, doesn't have a lifespan. So it's not like a household that's going to, you know, sort of end, die. And so we shouldn't think of government debt like our personal household finances. It doesn't have to be paid back. That said, future generations bear the burden of that debt. So future generations' taxes have to pay for the interest on that debt.
So we can't just keep borrowing money forever. Like, there is a difference between $1 trillion of debt and like $2 trillion of debt.
Yeah, exactly. So we can borrow some amount forever, right? But we can't borrow just any amount forever.
Okay.
And so you're right. And the question is, yeah, like, is $1 trillion already too much? Maybe, maybe not. Is $2 trillion too much? Probably. The way, but maybe not. But we saw what happened with Greece. We're very, very far away from being like Greece. But we saw what happened to Greece in, I don't know, 2014 or thereabouts, where the people who were lending to them just lost total faith in their ability to pay it back. And it, you know, nearly cratered their entire economy and society. You know, banks were closing down. You couldn't get money out of ATMs. They needed a rescue package. It led to the downfall of a government. It was chaos. We don't want to get to that point. And the problem is that everything's fine until it's not.
Are there any countries in the world that don't have any debt?
Yeah, so Singapore's got a really low number. It might be around zero net debt because they have a big sovereign wealth fund. Off the top of my head, I think Norway, which has a super big sovereign wealth fund, might, when you net it all out, be pretty low. Luxembourg, I think, usually comes in. Luxembourg's like the most complicated country in the world to understand. It's basically a giant hedge fund, as far as I can tell, with a, you know, a few restaurants attached to it. So, and very nice hotels.
Who does Australia lend money to? Are we part of this like big bond buying scheme too?
Yeah, we do. So, for instance, your super fund would for sure buy some US government debt. Might well buy some European government debt, some Japanese government debt. So, yeah, there's people, you know, holding it across borders. You know, what's really important, though, is it's not just governments doing it themselves with other governments. It's often private entities, private banks, investment funds, and things like that.
Whenever I think about, like, economics too hard, it seems like such a, like, kind of fragile system in a way. Does having that kind of like globalized debt network help the world kind of stay more stable?
It does help the world stay more stable, but it does open us up, and it allows the fact that money can flow around the world helps make sure that the most important things to invest in, the most important places to have infrastructure built, get that money. So the kind of global flow of capital has made rich countries and poor countries way, way better off. It's a great thing. What happens, though, when you get to a point like in 2008 where the whole global financial system kind of gets into trouble? So I remember very vividly, I was on the faculty at the University of Chicago in the summer of the US summer of 2008 when, you know, like Bear Stearns had gone bankrupt earlier in the year and when Lehman Brothers failed. And I remember talking to a very senior government official who I knew, and this person is not taken to extreme statements. They're pretty chill most of the time, very, very senior and experienced. And they said to me, you should go get cash and bottled water because I don't think ATMs or convenience stores are going to be open on Monday. And this goes to the fragility. Once people stop believing that things are going to be okay, that can become a self-fulfilling prophecy. And you can have, we saw a version of that in Greece, which is you had basically a bank run on a country. People stopped believing in the country. You know, what happened in the US at that time was that there was a bunch of banks who lent to each other short term and said every 24 hours, you owe me many tens of billions of dollars, but that's okay. As long as I think that you're going to be okay, I'll just roll it over and I won't ask for my money back. And then one day they were like, but I've just seen what happened to Bear Stearns. I just saw what happened to Lehman Brothers. I want my money back, or I want some of it back, right? Because other people might be asking me for their money back and I need to pay them. And I've got 24 hours to come up with like $10 billion. And so once people believe the worst, that just becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And that's why the US Federal Reserve and the Treasury had to step in with these extraordinary measures to say, we're not going to let this go down. And we had to do the same thing here in Australia with our Reserve Bank and our Treasury at the time.
Wow. It's kind of like Santa, you know, like you have to keep in believing it or the presents won't keep coming.
Exactly. Yeah. I like that. I may steal that at some point.
You're welcome to.
Well, Richard, thank you so much for explaining all of that to us. We really appreciate your expertise.
It's a pleasure. Great to chat with you.
Rania, do you understand government debt now?
Better. I'm getting there. I'm getting there.
We are not 100% yet.
But I feel like I've got a concept. Big thing, I know who the debt is to. I think that's the mystery of all of this that has been solved for me today.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's really interesting, like, him talking about the great global network of debt. Like, that's really fascinating. And it says a lot about how the world operates today.
And makes you feel like you're not alone, you know? Like, everyone's in this together.
Oh, we've all got debt. Yeah, yeah. God, I have a lot of debt.
Well, that's it for this week. Thank you so much for listening.
And we will be back next week. So in the meantime, please like, subscribe, give us a thumbs up and join us on YouTube as well if you're only listening on podcasts.
See you then.
Bye.